even has an MP3 too.
Pretty awesome. This is definitely changing, right? Yeah.
Some radiation.
So, the end of Malchus Adina, we have a lot to talk about tonight. If we don't finish, we don't finish. But there's plenty. It's one of my pet favorites in terms of topics and teaching.
And the end of Malchus Adina is a law you must follow like any other. The problem is, us Orthodox Jews very often have trouble applying any sanctity or reverence to a mitzvah that isn't ritualized.
We get by a lot easier, you know, when it comes to, say, looking for a branch that comes from a certain tree, and a lemon that comes from a certain tree, and two branches like that, and three branches like that, where the leaves are positioned exactly like that, and we have measurements, we have blessings, or whatever it might be, so we very easily attribute more authority to ritualized mitzvahs. But unfortunately, we don't attribute enough authority to non-ritualized mitzvahs. We're all careful with the lulav and the estol, or the water from the tefillah sedayim, but we're not careful for the speed limit, so to speak, as one example. And there's many other examples. But these are mitzvahs just like any other. And all being adam l'chaveiro, very often we have to change our way of thinking. Often do a turnaround and realize that these are mitzvahs just like anything else. So there's no blessing, and there's no shiur, and there's nothing really odd and mysterious and peculiar. There's no ashes of a red cow, but really it's still a mitzvah like any other. Dina de Malchus Adina is mentioned in at least 25 places in Shulchan Aruch. So we're going to discuss the evolution of Dina de Malchus Adina right from Tanakh, Mishnah, Gemara, Rishonim, Achronim. A really nice potpourri of sources and evolution of Dina de Malchus Adina. The first thing we're going to talk about is whether Dina de Malchus Adina is Dairaisa or Dirabanan. Everyone agrees it's a mitzvah you have to keep, to follow. But is it Dairaisa or Dirabanan? So, of course, there's two schools of thought. One school is the Dirabanan, and one school is Dairaisa. The Dirabanan side is based on a case in Shulchan Aruch in Eben Ezer Simen Chav Ches, Kiddushin, marrying a woman. At the Beferu Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Aruch says, what if a chassan is mekadesh a lady with stolen goods? The ring he stole from Pinsky Jewelry on Dolev, he bashed the window, grabbed the ring, he went to his wedding. He is mekadesh the lady. So, the kiddushin is good. If the balim were misyayish, they gave up hope of recovering their objects. So if the ring was stolen from Grand Central Station, we're certain the owner gave up hope of ever finding his object. The chassan then goes and gives the ring to his wife as kiddushin. The kiddushin is valid. It's halacha, it's Shulchan Aruch. Yush and shinui rishus. Pashas Yush has to come first. But Pashas Yush has to come first. Let's say it did. Yush came first, and there's Shinui Rishus. There's a concept in Hilchas Gneiv and Gezela. Very often, when things change hands, the former owners are more out of luck than they were prior to the stolen object changing hands. Anyways, the Kiddushin is good with the stolen object. So the Beis Shmuel on the page right there in Sifkot and Gimel says, what's going on here? Very often, the place you live in, the government law is you have to return lost objects. You have to return stolen objects. So therefore, how could the Kiddushin be valid? Because according to Dina the Malchus Adina, the ring never changed ownership. So the Beis Shmuel says the fact that Kiddushin is good is a raya that it's Darabanan. Because if it was Dairaisa, the weight of the legal obligation to return lost objects, or at least the weight that a stolen object does not change owners, because of Dina Malchus Adina, is valid enough. Sorry, I don't have any more papers. But tonight is a style that don't necessarily need a paper. You really don't necessarily need a paper. But, okay? So that's the Beit Shmuel's proof. We want to say it's Drabban because the Kedushin is valid, even if the place you live in would require you to return the ring and or the place we live in, it rules that the ring that indeed does not change ownership. No, because Midaraisa, he doesn't have to return the ring if Yush took place. No, but the woman, validly, you're right. The woman, though, validly acquired the ring she's given. Yeah, okay? So because the woman validly, lahalacha, acquired the ring she gives in, nevertheless, Dina Malchus Dina says she wouldn't acquire the ring, the Beis Shmuel says it's the Raya, it's the Rabbanon.
What is the proper version of
the whole concept of Dina Machus Dina. Okay? Now, on the other hand, and there are many others like the Beit Shmuel, that's just the easiest example to show you. But the Raisa side, we have the Chasam Sofer, has a famous case also brought by Tzitz Eliezer. And that is, there is a law. And the law is, if you have a cow, and the cow is pregnant, the firstborn cow is Kadosh, is Hekadosh. The firstborn cow has to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash and slaughtered and burnt and given to the Kohen to eat. Now, the Chasam Sofer says over there, it's in Yoredeya Shin Yudalid, and he says that if you sell any amount, let's say half the cow, to a Gentile, very often, like we sell a business on Shabbos to a Gentile, or we'll get the chametz on Pesach to a Gentile, but if you sell half the cow to a Gentile, or even half the uterus, or all the uterus, of course, to a Gentile, the fetus, I mean, there's no kedusha chal on the cow. So this is a raya, that's the raisa, because the power of the sale, the legality of the sale is so legit to the non-Jew, that even the deraisa of hektish, of a firstborn kosher animal, is nullified, because it didn't belong to a Jew. Very good, but here's where it comes in. Very good, I wasn't clear, I could have been clearer. What if the sale wasn't done lahalacha, but only lefidina d'mufusadina? There was no proper kinyan lahalacha. So even then, very good, I should have been clearer, but yeah. Afal Pekin, that's how much. And even if the Kenyan selling the cow to the non-Jew wasn't done la halacha with halachic ways, halachic methodology of sale, nevertheless the contract of Kazavdina de Bukhusadina is still chal.
One of the halacha kinyanim following what's done in the society. So if you are doing according to societal kinyan, that would be good off the halacha also.
I think, go into this, but I think it is a chiddush to say off the bat, even if it wasn't done la halacha, it's still good Kazavdina de Bukhusadina. I think it's a bit of a chiddush. Yeah?
That if you do like a handshake, you say,
man, we'll go ahead.
Right. Kenyan Simtuta, right. Right. Kenyanim is also a good shirt to have. Okay. So, moving right along. Oh, by the way, so I brought in the sheet over there, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, that says very clearly that, I threw that in there, but everyone agrees that there's a concept of Dina Damhus Adina. No one disagrees. Questions of the Rabbanon and the Raisa. Okay, fine. Some Talmudic examples. Yeah, so I brought you three Talmudic examples of Dina d'Malchus HaDina. The first is Nedarim Chaf Zayin Amud Beis. Very interesting. So the Mishnah over there says that you're allowed to lie to murderers, to robbers, and to tax collectors. If they come and say, I want to steal your this, I want your bike, I want whatever it might be, you're allowed to lie to these people and say, no, the food is it hasn't been it's truma. The food is truma, or you can say this property belongs to the king. Now, the Gemara assumes that a Jewish thief, won't steal an object if it's truma, because if he eats it, it's misa b'deishamayim. And the Mishnah and Gemara assume that if you tell the thief that it belongs to the king, so too there the king won't steal it because he'll get his head cut off if he steals the king's possessions. So you're allowed to lie to a murderer, to a robber, and to a tax collector. So the Gemara asks a question over there in Nedarim, why are you allowed to lie to a tax collector? Dina d'malchus adina, you have to pay taxes. So the Gemara says over there, he says, you're right, it's only when the tax collector is a dishonest man collecting more than he's allowed to, or that he should, or that is raui. Why? Because in the olden days, taxes work differently. Very often the tax collector was a rough man, and he would go to you and decide what kind of mood he was in and leave you taxes upon you based on his mood. Those people are unlawful people. You're allowed to avoid paying taxes, and you're allowed to lie, as the Mishnah and Gemara say in those cases. Okay, today's tax collectors are different, and we'll get to it later on. So that is a raya from the back door, actually, that Dina d'Malchus HaDina applies, and you have to pay taxes unless the taxes are not taken lawfully. The Gemara in Gittin, Mishnah Gemara in Gittin, Daf Yud, has a different case, and the Gemara over there and the Mishnah over there says that all shtaros are valid. Except Gittin, of course, and Shihurei Avadim. Okay? So, of course, we can't divorce according to civil law. A woman who divorces according to civil law is still married. It's not a kosher get. But the Mishnah seems to say that all other documents are indeed kosher if done according to Dina Malchus HaDina. So the Gemara asks the question, how can Matanos be valid under Dina Malchus HaDina? There's no valid kinyan that is made. The Gemara answers, Amar Shmuel, the famous Shmuel, Dina d'Malchus HaDina, it's good enough, even if the matanos weren't done with a kinyan, it's still chal. matanos, which is a big chiddush because we'll get in later on, wills. Where does wills come into dina machus adina or la halacha? But that is a source, Gemara Gittin Daf Yud, that all documents, except for really ritualized documents, like a get, really ritualized with clear halachas, are all valid according to dina machus adina. And finally, a similar case in Bava Kamma, Kuf Yud Gimel, and there are others, I just brought three. So the Gemara over there says you're not allowed to make change with the tax collectors. If a tax collector is sitting in his tax booth on the street, you're not allowed to go make change. Why are you allowed to make change? Because he might steal. It might be stolen goods. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean stolen goods?
Tzedakah.
And you're right. You're not allowed to make change, it says there, or take tzedakah from tax collectors. A tax collector gives another example. Tax collector is someone else, I forget now. But tax collectors, it says you cannot take what? That you can't take staka from them, right? Again, it's even stronger. You can't take staka for them, and you can't even make change with them. So Gemara says, why? They're tax collectors. You have to pay taxes. Dina de malchus adina. So Gemara again then says, yes, you have to pay taxes, but these people we're talking about are the unlawful tax collectors, and probably the money they have is stolen or unlawfully gained, and therefore you can't even take tzedakah from them. Okay, just as an aside, I mean, you gotta be careful who you take tzedakah from, right? A lot of moistos today in the world turn a blind eye to where the money comes from, but you see, maybe not supposed to. Okay?
What is change? I mean, what's not taken anything? What's change? If you have a 10 shekel, you want 2 far shekels.
Good question.
You made a fee for the street.
But he said, yeah, but he's saying. Is it getting hana from Zela? It's a good. I don't know the answer, but maybe I'm thinking off the cuff. Maybe it's hana from Zela Gedeva? I don't know. Could it be getting hana? Inappropriate hana? Acholakim Agazlan, maybe?
It's not a hana.
Maybe hana. Might be a din of Acholakim Agazlan. It's a good kasha, I'm not sure. Okay, so those are some of the Talmudic cases. Now, theories of the Rishonim. Why is Dina de Malchus Adina Chal upon us? Right, is it Chal upon us because Hashem took us out of Yisraim, right? Or is it Chal upon us because God created the world in 6 days? Or is it Chal upon us whatever reason you might want to give? Why is it Chal? Okay, for instance, you're not allowed to drive crazy, not just because of Dina de Malchus Adina, because of the Haftarecha Kamoicha. Because of the Shmarta Melanav Sheikh, Lanav Shosechem. So, and Dina de Malchus Adina. So there's a lot of reasons you can't drive like a maniac. Dina de Malchus Adina is only one of them. Okay, so the question is, what... I'm sorry? Well, I have a list at home, but off the cuff, Chasam Soifer brings them, Titaliezer brings it. That's the Raisa. But I happen to have a lot of material at home on Dina de Malchus Adina. If you want anything else, fill-ins, exact sources, it's a pleasure. Feel free to send me an email, I'll send it to you. I've been researching this for years. Like, it's one of the things that I always... I turn to once, you know, every so often again and try and learn more and go a little bit deeper. Tons of sources on this. So the Rashbam and the Ramban says, why is it Chal? What is binding us to the concept of the Dina Malchus Adina? Because when you live in a place, you are combining with others into a social agreement, an unwritten and unspoken social agreement to live with others according to established laws. Okay, you chose to live in a certain place. You came and lived here, you came and bought a house here, you came and moved in here, you accepted upon yourself the laws of the land. Wherever that might be. Okay, you want to go live in Iran, you go with your wife and live in Iran, you've got to have your wife dress the way they dress over there, because you choose to move that place, you bind yourself to the laws of the land, etc. Okay, and by the way, there's more, I just write the Rashba and the Ramban, but there's many more. In each of these categories, there's many, many more, of course. Truma Sedeshin is very similar. By choosing to live somewhere, you are making a statement. Right, you wake up in the morning, you leave your house, you're making a statement that you are part of society, you're part of the laws of this place, you're bound to follow them. The Rashba is very interesting. In fact, we had the Rashba is based on a pasuk we had in Parshas Chukas this past Shabbos. The Rashba says that citizens have a din of prisoners, right? A non-Jew rules over us, we are prisoners, and Goyim can acquire Jews. It says in this Parsha, past Parsha, Parshas Chukas, it's Perek Chaf, Vayishbu Mehem Shevi. Is a pasuk in the war. It was Edom. And the pasuk ends off by Yishbu Mem Shevi. The Jews were taken prisoner. So it's based on that pasuk that when Goyim take Jews prisoner or Goyim acquire Jews or rule over Jews, they're acquired. Us Jews are acquired by Goyim just by being under their authority and by that virtue, which is a shtickle deraisa, based on a pasuk, you're bound to Dina Malchus Adina. Okay? The Mabit and others, that all Gentile rulers have a din of kings. If you look and say for Shmuel and Perek Ches, there's a whole list there of how powerful the king is. Some of it's very scary. So those powers, as delineated in Sefer Shmuel, applied to all kings, and we are bound and subservient to them.
So there's no nafkamina. Sorry, I just want to, for a second, make sure you didn't say that. There's no nafkamina, because you mentioned, for example, moving to Iran, you have to go to it. But if you already live in Iran, and then they become the shuddah, it's the same halacha?
That's a very good kasha. We're going to get to that. We are going to get to that. It's only which in the heading, which laws does it apply to? We're going to get to that. If I don't answer your question clearly, ask me again.
Also, let's say you move to a Medina that are known to be obeyed of Mubazara. You still have to follow it?
Right, so we're going to get to its own, also its own category on these pages, is that it doesn't apply to any ritual matters. Dina de Mahusa, Dina cannot overcome halacha. That goes without saying. Okay? Fine. The next one is my favorite. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer in his Evan HaEzel has an ingenious approach as to why we have to keep Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. It happens to be my favorite. And that is, one of the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach is dinim. The goyim are forced to establish courts of law. The goyim have to have a set of rules, and everyone who lives under those courts has to follow those rules. Okay? That's, I think, very ingenious. I haven't seen it anywhere else. You got it? Everyone got that one? Everyone? Anybody awake? Anybody at all? Yeah? So, it's a good one. Okay? The Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach is dinim. Goyim have to set up laws, and whoever lives under the laws have to keep them, just like everyone else.
But
this is all that's what we hold with Daraisa? L'chayri would, right? If it's Dini, right? If something, right? Right? Yeah. Okay.
Is it safe to say that the people who organized this protest
think we're not talking about the protest.
No, I'm not talking about that either. I'm saying that they would obviously disagree with Yidim al-Mahusa in Eretz Yisrael.
We have a category of Din HaMalchus in Eretz Yisrael. What I will say, though, I will answer it to you because it is related to here and it's not on the sheet. Okay, now we are going to talk about Din HaMalchus in Eretz Yisrael. We are not going to talk about the Bagatz versus the Badatz. But you did bring up a point that's related to the heading we're under, the heading we're on right now. And a lot of them are shown to make a distinction. Okay, this applies everywhere, not just in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, distinction is between the courts and the executive elected legislative body. So there is a theory in the poskim that if the courts make up a law, tomorrow the courts pass a law that you have to wear pink underwear with fancy colors and stripes, you don't have to follow it. But if it makes it to the Knesset and they vote it in, then you would have to follow it. Okay? Because the courts, again, they want to make a differentiation between the courts, the legislative body, and the executive political bodies. So when a court just goes and passes a law tomorrow morning, doesn't mean we have to follow it under Dina de Mahusa Dina. Right, we might have to follow, if the courts rule you have to go out and get gas masks, you have to follow it under the Nishmarta Me'od Nafsho Seichem. We can't lose focus over here. Like our Yetzirah wants us to always lose focus on Dina de Malchus Adina issues by telling us, oh, maybe it's not Dina de Malchus Adina. Well, that might be true, but it might fall under other issues. Like in safety, right? In driving, in a war, you have to get a gas mask. So maybe not I'll be Dina de Malchus Adina, but definitely I'll be the Nishmarta Me'od Nafsho Seichem. It might be the Hatar Ech Gamocha, etc., etc. Okay, fine. Rav Eliezer Mimetz says the king owns the land and may deport anyone who does not abide by his laws. Okay, how much that applies today in our democratic societies, I'm not sure. But that's that school of thought, that because the king owns the land and can deport anyone, you have to listen to his rules. You are subject to his rules. He can throw you at any time. Related to this somewhat is by laws of Eruv. One of the requirements when you make an Eruv for carrying on Shabbos is that the entire city is united as one family. You have to have the physical Eruv, the enclosure, but you also have what's called Schiras Reshus. Schiras Reshus means the entire domain becomes one big domain. So how is it that in America, in Canada, we go to the mayor, we go to the prime minister, we do a kinyan with him, and the prime minister grants us this right, the Schiras Reshus, to form the entire neighborhood into one neighborhood. And the explanation is, it's called the right of eminent domain. I don't know, I think everywhere in the world, the police have the right to go into your house, and even to bring people into your house, and to take you out of your house against your will. That's called eminent domain. Because the police and the authorities have that right. I'm sorry? Is that related to that? Not to the army, billeting the soldiers or something? Okay. Okay, so in this country it happens all the time, they take people's houses to make highways. No, seriously. Okay, so maybe I'm confusing the two concepts. It could be.
The streets.
So what's it called? Powers? But some people go to the prime minister, the president even, in Washington, D.C.
It's still called police powers. Police powers or martial law. Like
martial, that's what I'm looking for, martial law. So eminent domain is when they break down the house and make a highway.
Right, they let them take the house and say, take it, and they say, we'll give you this as a bounty. You go to court to try to fight
right.
to get more money. But that's eminent domain for the better of the public.
So in this country, I think it's similar to eminent domain, is they can take your car to the army. Not you. But your car, right? If they find out you have a 20-seater and they want to get soldiers from Eilat to the Golan Heights, they can come and take your car and take the soldiers around and bring back your car next week with how many dents and bruises and bangs and scrapes. So that, we do have eminent domain. That would be eminent domain. You have that. So that would work for Eruv, would also work for Rabbi Elazar Mimetz, is his understanding, his explanation as to why Dina D'Malchus Dina applies, is because we are powerless over our possessions. Ultimately, that's the bottom line I was getting to. We are powerless ultimately of our possessions. Okay? Fine. Moving right along. What kind of government does Dina D'Malchus HaDin apply to? So this is the Rambam in Hilchos Gzeila, Perek Hey. And the Rambam says over there that Dina D'Malchus HaDin applies in a place where the government issues currency, which is accepted and used by all people of the land, and by default they recognize that place, those who issue the currency, to be the civil authority. Okay, now in Somalia they don't have one currency, right? Because it's warlords, it's hefkeris over there. So according to the Rambam, Dina D'Malchus HaDin would not apply. Okay, in this country the currency is very powerful because even our enemies in Gaza and in Shtachim, they use a shekel, right? So we see that the currency is well established, and by well established currency it displays that the civil authority is the accepted ruling power. Okay, in the Shulchan Aruch Paschals like the Rambam, again, the bar, the measurement of where, which countries, all these ideas of Dina D'Malchus HaDin apply to, is where the currency is circulated, and only one currency is circulated. In place you have more than one currency, there'd be no obligation, perhaps, to follow Dina D'Malchus HaDin. But again, you still wouldn't allowed to be, you wouldn't allowed to drive like a maniac, because even though it might not be Dina D'Malchus HaDin, it's Nishmarta Mil D'Nafsho Seichem, etc., etc.
Like,
so the
amount to which dollars in this year, is that enough?
What?
The amount, the extent to which US dollars
are
used here, is that enough to
continue
to currency
country? I don't think it's
good
kasha. Yeah, but here the government is not issuing
that. This country is pretty much, I mean, the currency is shekel. I mean, you can sell a house in rand, in sand, in whatever you want, in right? Can you, by kesef, anything that has value is.
But until recently, most of the was
by law, by coincidence, I'm not, I don't know. Maybe sorry, Chiyun. I don't know. I'm not arguing. I'm playing devil's advocate. Yeah. Yeah, it could be, again.
Houses were priced in dollars, but they were paid in shekels.
Yeah, okay.
No, but it's paid in shekels.
So the value of these dollars are going in shekels, so still, it's still shekels. Okay. Is the next heading Eretz Yisrael? You have that over there? Okay. So, the famous question, does Dina D'Malchus HaDin apply in Eretz Yisrael or not? This is a famous question. It's a very much misunderstood question and misunderstood issue. The primary Rishon, the primary source that Dina D'Malchus HaDin might not apply in Eretz Yisrael is the Ran, a Maseches Nedarim and Daf Chav Ches. And the Ran seems to say over there, based on the theory that Dina D'Malchus HaDin applies based on taxes and the ability to throw you out of your land, based on that theory, Dina D'Malchus HaDin does not apply in Eretz Yisrael, because God owns the land and God gave us the land, and no power has a legitimate authority to throw us out of our land. So based on that, the Ran says there's no Dina D'Malchus HaDin in Eretz Yisrael.
School of the gorillas of the Mets.
Exactly. Bidyuk. Perfect. He follows the theory to the letter of Rabbi Elazar Mimetz and those we've shown him, who explain it based on the ability of the king to throw you out of your land or whatever it might be. And since that can't happen in Eretz Yisrael, it shouldn't happen in Eretz Yisrael, there's no Dina D'Malchus HaDin. Now the only issue with this is that none of the posts can bring this Ran down the Halacha. Not the Rambam. The Rambam Paskin is Beferish, there is Dina D'Malchus HaDin in Eretz Yisrael. And the Shulchan Aruch as well. in the Shin Samech Tes, in Choshe Mishpat, also Paskins, so there's Dinat Malchus Adina in Eretz Yisrael. So to argue that there's no Dinat Malchus Adina in Eretz Yisrael is a very, very hard case. But Bo Nagid, we could push that aside for a moment, and let's say that perhaps Dinat Malchus Adina does not apply in Eretz Yisrael. Well, what does that mean? So I don't have to pay taxes? I can drive like a maniac and go through red lights? What does that mean? So listen to this. So even if you want to say it doesn't apply, the concept of Dina da Malchus Adin does not apply in Eretz Yisrael, that might not necessarily get you out of paying taxes. Why? Because taxes, from a Talmudic perspective, are generally referred to as monies that make the king rich. That's what taxes are, to enrich the king. However, in our day and age, taxes don't have that status anymore. Today, taxes goes to pay for police, and ambulance, and fire, and postage, and arnona, and garbage collection, and building streets, and building highways. So therefore, the halachic definition of taxes from the Talmudic era is not what we call taxes today. So Herschel Schachter wants to make an argument that even if you want to say there's no din of Malchus Adin Eretz Yisrael, you get out of taxes, midin shutfis, because of the halachic concept of shutfis, partnerships. And the halachas of partnerships require everyone in the partnership to contribute, even against their will, for the benefit of everyone else. So, and then other posts want to differentiate between land taxes and income taxes. Then you have, I'm sorry?
About halacha, one of the posts can say when the Malchus Adin said, makes a rule that's against halacha.
Everyone agrees that Dina da Malchus Adin cannot override halacha. There's no argument there in any country in the world at any time or any place. No argument. Then some posts want to differentiate between land taxes and income taxes. And then some want to differentiate between income taxes that's on the books and that the chelik we make in Shachor. Right? We all make a chelik in Shachor. So some want to differentiate between this and that. Traffic. So the Shevet Alevi, Rav Bosner, and Chelik Yud, Shevet Alevi, Chelik Yud, Tshuva, Reish, Tzadik Aleph, he talks about driving in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, someone asked him, can you drive like a maniac in Eretz Yisrael? There's no Dina de Malchus Adina. So Shevet Levi answers, you fool, doesn't matter if there's Dina de Malchus Adina in Eretz Yisrael for driving. It matters, Nishmartem Lemel, the Snafshot Seichem, Havahatarech Gamocha. I can list on a whole bunch of things. So the reality is, the argument, and we'll sum it up here, and we'll take questions on this component because it's such an exciting component. But their summary is, there really is no Nafka Mina Lahalacha, there is no practical difference for our daily lives in Eretz Yisrael, whether or not the concept of Dina de Malchus Adina is binding upon us or not. Because every issue that we interact with, almost, not everything, but almost every issue that we interact in our lives, financial, social, whatever it might be, fall under other areas of Torah law. And maybe it doesn't fall under Dina de Malchus Adina, but so what? We still have the Haftarech Kamocha, where Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. We have the Shmar Temel Esnafshos Seichem, which covers all kinds of security and those kind of issues. It's, and we have taxes, it's shutfis, etc., etc., etc. I'm sorry? That's a form of arevus, right? Also, yeah.
According to those posts, the whole Dina Malchus Adina does apply to Eretz Yisrael. Does that even apply to a non-Jewish government that it shouldn't be here to begin with?
Even more so. Because the whole idea, as the Ran says, almost black and white. Oh, we're going to get the Turkish man to have a nice shootim on that. But even more so, if it's in secular non-Jewish government, because the whole idea of Dina Malchus Adina not applying in Eretz Yisrael is when we live here and we're controlling it, according to Torah law, a Jewish king. But you don't have a Jewish king, it seems it's Kal Vachomer, in order to have a proper civil society. Dina Malchus Adina is even more important. Right? If you don't have a halachic society, you better at least have a good civil society. Your people, like the Mishnah says in Avos, will eat each other up alive. Right? Yeah.
In regard to going with the speed limit in Chutz La'aretz, I heard a share from Rav Willig, Willig's father, that he used the Lashon, I think, 7 miles over the limit. Basically, he said there's a certain amount where they're mochel. He said, to whatever extent that the law enforcement is mochel, right, is not going to pull you over for, that's not being over the amount of Zina because they're mochel.
Right, that's what I heard from Rav Scheinberg also.
A law that's widely ignored.
It's on here.
Status as Dina de Malchus.
Yes.
Since most people drive more than 55, that's considered a law that's widely ignored.
Yeah, that's the next heading. That's the next heading, Binyamin. Exactly. Very good.
How much?
Yeah.
Just a quick question. Somebody told me in the name of one of the major post schemes, when the taxes are not applied equitably in Eretz Yisrael, i.e., you have Arabs who don't pay any taxes, when it's not a fair tax system,
Okay, that's yes. It's in the Maharik, very easily accessible and understood by the Maharik. And the Maharik says like this: what if you have a society where different sectors are taxed at different amounts? Does it apply? So he says yes. If every sector is taxed proportionally or at least consistently within its own sector, even though the other sector may be treated unfairly, they still have to comply. I have to pay as long as the entire sector is treated fairly. But if within the sector they're not treated fairly, then it would fall apart. So one of his examples is a shechita tax. At some places, a shechita tax only on Jews. The halal didn't have a tax. Only the Jews have a tax. You have to pay. He says you have to pay. Because although it's not fair that the goyim don't have this tax for the ritual slaughter, but it's done equally. It's a set amount. It's done fair. There's a system. You have to follow it. That being said, I did come across a tshuva just in recent times, and I don't want to totally regurgitate it or quote the source because I'm not sure I got it clearly, but he seems to say that when the rulers don't pay taxes or don't follow tax laws, then it would also fall apart under Dina de Machusa Dina to pay taxes, right? So we have the most corrupt government on the planet, especially the previous prime minister who made more in tax evasion than all of us make a year combined. So it could be that for the issue of Dina de Machusa Dina, paying tax to this country, possibly based on why some of the remes I saw between lines and some tshuvas, it could be that it doesn't apply under Dina Mechusadina. But if you or me don't pay our no, we all suffer. That's why in Ramat Beit Shemesh Bet they only have garbage collection twice a week, and we have it more, because they don't pay our no. So the services went down. If you and I stop paying our no in this neighborhood, our services will go down. So then again, you have shutfis. Now each one has to pay for the other. There's a Chazon Ish that says that they don't pay Vad Bayit, you can throw them out of their building. Vad Bayit. Vad Bayit. In the buildings we live in, if you don't pay Vad Bayit, if family doesn't pay Vad Bayit, they're negligent, you can throw them out of the building. How much more so a Chazon Ish? Listen, there might be other factors to consider, but the concept that holds true. If you're refusing to pay Vad Bayit, you have no business being there. You have no business to live there.
But you're owning the part. How can they throw you out? There's no eminent domain. How can they throw you out of your own apartment that you own?
I guess in a halachic system, you forfeit your right to live in that building.
Is that determined by the road?
The air, you're breathing clean air. You walk in.
By which thing?
Is that determined by the road?
Yes. The halachas of shutfus in Choshen Mishpat, I think it's Kuf Nun Gimel, it says over there that the majority can define and impose on the minority how much taxes to pay and what the taxes go to, which is very significant in this country because our tax money goes to a lot of places that we probably don't approve of. We probably are very sickened that our money goes to certain areas. But still, halacha is very clear that as long as we're benefiting somewhere in that pot of money, even though the majority of the money is going to places we don't agree with, we're still bound under shutfis to contribute to this pot and benefit from the services that we're given. Okay. So Ad Kan Eretz Yisrael, and again, there's no practical difference because even if you want to say it doesn't exist in Eretz Yisrael, you still have to follow the laws by other rules.
You said there was a hill in the Shofar Levon.
Yeah.
Who's the one that determines what Shofar
Levon? No, because we all have a job. So in this country, there's no Chil Hashem by not paying taxes and working Shachor. There's no Chil Hashem, because everyone does it. There's Pasha, no Chil Hashem, really, damn it.
But what?
Not Makaba.
Yeah. Shachor is what?
Okay, so it's similar to the speed limit idea that you're allowed to go, they ignore after over 7 miles an hour, whatever it is. It's related to that concept. We all have jobs, we have a Tushma score, and we get Bituch Lumi, we pay Bituch Lumi, we go to a doctor. But if someone pays me to tutor their son, do I have to go off the feed Dina Mkhusadina to declare the money? Likely not.
So does that mean that if you don't have to go by Dina Mkhusadina, then you're allowed to rely on the tax return?
So again, Rav Moshe has a lot of tshuvas about lying on tax returns. Rav Moshe Feinstein.
I'm not talking about the United States.
Okay. Okay.
If let's say you have that shofar money that perhaps Dina Mkhusadina would not have to declare, does that make it look there to lie on the tax return?
In this country, you're saying?
Yes, in this country.
I think it would follow through that you would not have to declare it.
Yeah, but by not declaring it, you are actively lying.
Okay. See again. So then. Okay. You're doing good. You're doing good. But then, what about those tours I saw? Which I, right. But okay. But then we have in this country, the rulers don't pay taxes. So then.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. That's halacha.
His point
Stephanie Schenker. Oh, you're saying, oh, very good. Okay, now you made it clear. That's a good concept.
Schenker, forget Dino Rizzuto.
Right, right.
These skills, we should skill. I mean,
it makes sense that DVD might not apply. But it might, like you're saying, like he's saying, it might make sense. It doesn't give you.
He does one wrong, doesn't mean I have to do it wrong.
Okay. You're saying good.
But it makes it wrong.
They're good kashas. They're good kashas that you need a real Yiras Shamayim to paskin who knows the territory. Okay. Okay. Which types of laws does the Din HaMalchus apply to? Like I mentioned previously, if the courts pass a law tomorrow, the Knesset passes a law tomorrow, that you'll have to have pink wallpaper in your kitchens, does that mean it applies under Din HaMalchus Adina? So you have over here which laws does it apply to? There's basically five categories where it might or might not apply, and that is A, the laws must be in existence for a long time. Okay, if the Prime Minister wakes up tomorrow morning and passes through a law, the first reading, and goes through where there's no time, whatever, it might not apply according to Dina HaMalchus Adina. It has to be in existence for a while, it became habitual to follow. Two, has to be well known. Because there's some subsection in some law books related to whatever it might be, and nobody knows it, so it might be in halacha, you know, the fine print, you know, you have to sign on the fine print, right? It could be halacha recognizes that if you didn't read the fine print, that might be okay, because nobody reads the fine print. I'm telling you, Lemaisa, that a Beis Din today in America, if you come to a Beis Din, two parties come to a Beis Din with a contract where it seems that one party is fully guilty because the fine print of the contract he signed would make him guilty, the Beis Din say, nobody reads the fine print, the guy's not guilty, he doesn't have to pay. Because nobody reads the fine print. Yes, it's there, yes, he should have read it, but nobody reads it, you don't have to. So same with Dina Machus Adina. If it's a fine print of some sub-law, some subsection, it might not apply. D, very important. It must fulfill a government function. It must be beneficial to the government, i.e., it makes society run nicely, it funds education, fire, registry, roads, whatever it might be. E, it applies to all citizens of the country. So we touched on earlier, it only applies to certain sectors. So most posts can say that as long as it's every sector and it's consistent within the sector, it would still apply even though it is discriminatory. Okay? Here's an interesting tshuva that applies to D, with the government function. Dina HaMalchus Adina under government function. The Melamed Lahoyel, Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, has a shaila. It's very scary to read through the shaila in tshuva because it's frightening, or at least it appears to be frightening, that he passed in this way. And someone wrote to him in World War II, he had to go to the army. Okay, World War II, he writes him, I have to go to the army. So should I try and lie and evade the draft? Should I get out of going to the draft? No kosher, no Shabbos. We know what the army is in World War II, in Germany, wherever it might have been. So he answered, you must go to the army. You are not allowed to evade the draft. It'll be a chilul Hashem. Be nice, play along, and hopefully you keep Shabbos to the best extent possible. And you could eat the best extent possible of closest to possible kosher foods. That's David Tzvi Hoffman, Melamed Lahoyel. He said you have to go to the army, the secular Treifa army.
So will be an example of something in Dina that's not...
He said, under Dina Malchus Adina. That's a Kiddush, I'm saying.
That's one of the reasons for Malchus Adina.
If...
One of the main reasons for Malchus Adina is for Hashem.
You're saying it's synonymous? You want to say it's synonymous? Yeah.
He said seven because he didn't want to mention it on Hashem.
Right. I haven't seen that they're synonymous.
Hashem is one of the reasons for Malchus
Adina? Not the way you worded it just now. As one of the reasons for Malchus Adina. No. I haven't seen like that.
No, just be careful though. That's not a reason for Dina
to know. No, I'm pretty sure I saw that. One of the reasons for, I mean, according to some Jewish ones.
If the Jew gets out of the... If you get caught
cheating on taxes, you get caught, you know, speeding, whatever it is, then you've now plus one. Everyone sees the Jew, look what he
so
did.
So that's an independent violation of the Torah called Chil Hashem. Maybe it's not a violation of Dina Machus Adina.
That's the scar of Dina Machus
Adina. But what about Satan of the Koshos? If you know by going into the problem of being drafted and going into the army, there's a very high chance that you... may get killed.
But most people return alive.
Most? The Vietnam War, there's a tremendous percentage got hurt and got killed. Not only here, they came
right.
Back, but it came back physically maimed.
Yes.
So it's a large percentage. The chances of which...
Does it go after Roiv? Why shouldn't it go after Roiv? Another thing I've learned.
Your president drafts dodges the draft, then so can you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it could be. It could be. It could be. Now,
anyway, out of the army, or they don't.
The question is, what is dodging the draft? There's dodging the draft. You make all kind of, there's ways to dodge a draft that are worse than others. Right, that people in this country dodge a draft by going to shacharis in some yeshiva, and they get a petik from the yeshiva, they go to shacharis. Petik says they learn all day, but they really just go to shacharis and learn a halacha or two after shacharis. And they go to the army, they evade the army in this country that way. The army accepts that. It's like already normalization, it's already fait accompli, it's expected. So is that a way, is that a bad evasion of the draft? Maybe it's not so bad, but then you have girls who go to the army, secular girls, chiloni girls, they say I'm cuckoo. They go to a psychiatrist, they get a letter that I'm cuckoo, and they're evaded that way. A lot tons do that, by the way. The cuckoo clause, there really is one. It applies to boys too. If boys want to get out of the army, secular boys, you can go to the cuckoo clause. So that's evading the draft. So I would say evading the draft by getting a paper from the yeshiva that might not be accurate is probably better than evading the draft with the cuckoo clause, because it's accepted that any Haredi boy doesn't go to the army. Whether he's learning all day or not, it's accepted in this country. The reality is the Haredim don't go to the army. But going to get the cuckoo clause is like, that's odd already. That's like unacceptable because it's not. It's cuckoo.
No,
okay.
They're reading the army only if you're doing something else.
No. Most. The reality is that Haredi boys don't go to the army, whether they're learners or they're not learners. That's the reality. We'd like to think that most of the ones who are not learning are not in the army are truly are learning all day. The reality is that most aren't. Most aren't.
What's an exception to D?
No, to delay, because that's a tshuva from the Malam of the Hoyle.
We're saying police, fire, roads. What would be something that's an example that's not?
That has no benefit to the government whatsoever?
Right.
The way you run a garage sale. You want to sell objects in your garage sale to your neighbors? You can do whatever you want, any barter.
Oh, about living in New Jersey, you can't sell liquor until 12 o'clock because of the church rules.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah,
Sunday. Yeah, I don't
what's
know.
What's that called? Blue laws?
I don't know.
Yeah, that has no benefit to the government.
Could be. I'm not familiar with this law, but yeah, could be. If there's absolutely no loss to the government, it's possible it might not fit under Dina Mechuzina. It might fit under something else.
It is. It's a law.
The question is, does halacha bind us to which laws? That's the question. Which laws does halacha bind us to based on Dina Mechuzina? I'll give you an example, a reverse example we're talking about right now. So with a famous Gemara, right, you find a lost object of a Gentile, you don't have to return it, right? Because you don't have to give it back to Jews. The reality is that halacha never had any authority for the last 2,000 years, wherever we lived, as the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says, in Hilchos HaShavas Aveda, in Kuf Pei Zayin, that Dina Mechuzadina is, you have to return the lost object of a Gentile, you have to return the lost object of a Gentile. End of story. You have to return it. So according to Dina Mechuzadina, you have to return every lost object, whether it's Jew or Gentile. You're not allowed to say... It's wrong?
No.
Oh, he's trying to argue it's not one of the laws that follow.
Right. Where does
it say, which law says that you have to return it?
I'm saying the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that there's a misconception that you don't have to return the objects belonging to a Gentile based on the Gemara, which says you don't have to return it, but he says that doesn't apply anymore because where we live, the Dina Mechuzadina says you have to return all lost objects.
I'm saying, where is there a law in the United States and New York and East? Where is there a law?
There are.
It's in the fine print.
It's in the fine print. It's in the fine print.
It's not in the fine print.
Could be.
No one knows about.
Could be. Hold on. So Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says it applies to Gentiles. You have to return lost objects even to Gentiles. You got a question?
What about a law that's in one country and you're living in another country, but you're like a movie? How does that work?
It's wherever you live.
You're living in Israel and you have American taxes.
Okay, we got to drop taxes. Got to do it again.
I'm asking about the tax question.
It's
totally not a tax question. About something else, copying things like music and...
Copyright halacha is a great issue.
Right,
no, copyright is chal because of Dina Mechuzadina, if not for other reasons as well. There is a big machlokes in today's poskim whether copyright is binding or not. But everyone agrees whether it fits into different halachic principles or doesn't fit into different halachic principles, it's binding under Dina Mechuzadina. So copying the tapes is simply usur because of Dina Mechuzadina. And they write it now. Copying is forbidden according to international law and Jewish law. You see that on the tapes now these days. Then that might be the halacha. Okay, then the halacha would follow that. According to the view that there's no other source for copyright within halacha. There are those who do argue that intellectual property is guarded by halachic principles. So based on that approach, you would not be allowed to, even for personal use, perhaps. Again, this is a juggle between Din de Malchus Adina and proper halacha itself. Interesting case, now Shechita was banned in New Zealand. You have to keep it. Much as you do. Shechita was banned in New Zealand. If you go and shecht an animal in New Zealand now, you are over Torah law. Why? Because who says you have to eat meat? What right do you have to be over Din de Malchus Adina?
Well, you can import it.
You can import it, right? You're allowed to import it. So a shtochel shecht in New Zealand today, the meat is strafe. And a lot of people talk about not paying taxes on the mezuzahs and tefillin and not the sofrim don't declare. A lot of poskim, right, that if a sofer doesn't declare taxes on the tefillin he sells, he can't buy tefillin from him. People don't know these tshuvas, but they really are there.
What if you argue the law itself, you could go to discriminatory, and this is, you know, anti-Semitic law, you could argue this is...
So, it's on a it's on an entire sector, fairly passed the law, legitimate. Which thing? There are tshuvas that say that you're not allowed to buy tefillin from a sofer if you know he's not going to claim taxes on the tefillin he sells.
Where can we buy
tefillin? I can only tell you what the tshuvas say. I can't tell you what to do. Okay.
Wait, so Shechita is banned
in New Zealand? So I believe it's us with the Shechita in New Zealand. I truly believe that. It's not against halacha. Because who says you have to eat meat? Yeah, no, seriously. You're allowed to import meat. I lived in Winnipeg, in Canada. They have no shechtim there. Everything. You had to import the meat.
Back then, you couldn't import.
5 years ago,
so
can
Russia,
you do
it? They said you're not allowed to wear do anything. You're not allowed to wear tefillin. So you're not allowed to wear tefillin?
No, because the Torah requires you to wear tefillin. The Torah doesn't require you to eat meat.
If you get caught, they'll kill you.
Okay. I don't think the two cases are comparable. I don't. Okay. There's no chiyuv to eat meat on Yom Tovid. There's no chiyuv. There's no chiyuv. It's a nice thing to do. You don't have to. Anyways, okay. Okay, let's move on. But just so happens to be this most recent point that came up with the Shechita in New Zealand, and I was learning this now. I truly believe it's us with the Shechita in New Zealand. It fits according to every possible principle. I can't think of a heter to Shechita in New Zealand. They're letting you bring in meat. It's from another place. Who says you have to eat meat? Then it doesn't fall, right, it doesn't apply. But it doesn't go against the Torah to ban Shechita. Because who says you have to eat meat? It's not against the Torah. There's no chiyuv to eat meat on Yom Tov. The vast majority of post-Kamal, there's no chiyuv to eat meat.
There's a lifnei iver on the society. Let's say Mustama, 99% of the New Zealand Jews are not going to spend the extra price to import it, and therefore they're going to buy trade meat. But if you would checked it, now you bring the Zaka the Rabbim, and then have your kosher meat.
Okay, that's a fair argument. It's a very big shikul. I don't know. A Rav has a paska. I think as of right now, New Zealand has no rabbis. I think, the Orthodox rabbis recently left.
Or Shoftim.
And it might be or Shoftim either. But that's a very serious shikul adas, and the people might eat treif otherwise. Okay, good kasha. Tzarech yun. Okay, sectors in which... When does Dina de Malchutim not apply? Bottom line, ritual issues. You don't have to follow Dina de Malchus Adina for anything in ritual issues. Now, where does Dina de Malchus Adina always apply? So I have it there for you, real estate, currency, taxes, documents, and business law. So we'll go through some of these tshuvas, some of them are very interesting. I want to go to the Pulat Tzedek in real estate. The Pulat Tzedek, the Yemenite rabbi, and he has a case like this. Again, it's under real estate, the last tshuva. So it says over there that the Jews lived in Yemen, the 1700s. The Jews lived in Yemen, and the Jews grew esrogim, and grew lulavim, and grew whatever you had to grow for to make a dalad minim. So came a time where the Pasha, or Sultan, whatever you call the Yemenite authorities, they came and confiscated the Jews' land and gave it to an Arab. Shaila is, this happened right before Sukkot. Are you allowed to now go buy your lulavim and your esrogim from the Arabs? The Jews are losing out, the land was stolen. So he passes very clearly, yes, you're allowed to buy it from the Arabs because the land no longer belongs to the Jews. Because under Dina the Malchus Adina, they have the right to give the land where they see fit and to take and give and take. So the Arabs own the lulav and the sogam. You've got to buy and pay money to the Arabs. Unfortunately, the Jews will lose out. But there's no halachic recourse for the Jews who lost their property. Okay? Mishpat Kohen, also under real estate. I have the Mishpat Kohen over there. It's a very difficult tshuva to understand because it has to do with Shemitah. One of Rav Kook's first tshuvas on Shemitah under the Turkish Empire. They asked Rav Kook, how can you sell Shemitah lands? The Torah says you're not to sell land to a goy. Eretz Yisrael, you're not to sell land to a Gentile. So Rav Kook answers that the land belongs to the Turks. And if they register in their registries that you're allowed to sell the land, the sale is a good sale, even though it goes against Torah law. So that's why Shemitah was okay under the Turks and under the British. Okay, currency laws. Well, in this country, it also, it's registered legally and properly under the real estate laws. However, you know, you get into the issue is what is today's government in Israel? Does it have a din of a melech? Does it have a din of a Jewish government? Does it have a din of an Akum government? There's a famous Tosfos that says even if Achav makes laws, we have to follow them. And Achav worshipped idols. It brought a void desire to the whole nation. So no matter how bad our prime minister is and the government is, they're not Oyvid Avodah Zarah, right? Like, as bad as they are, and they are horrible, they're bad. But Avodah Zarah is the worst. And Tosfos says very clearly, if Achav, who's Oyvid Avodah Zarah, makes laws, we have to follow them. But then you have the status. What is the status of Jewish government today? There's a lot of different views on this. By the way, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and Rav Yisrael Meir Lau have great papers. I'm sorry? You might say, you think as a din of the Malka, as a din of Malka maybe, not din of the Malka. Could be. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so you want to say cases aren't exact? Perhaps. Perhaps. I saw that brought down in a context as the Harai, you've got to keep laws even today's society, because even there they kept laws. So you're right, but I saw it brought down in a context where it would make sense to say based on Achav. But today, there's a lot of discussion what today's government is. There are some who hold as a din of Malchus Yisrael. And there's some who has, say, as din Akum. And probably the truth lies somewhere in between. The reality is somewhere in between. We have religious Jews in the government. Even though the government, you have to understand something. Even though the government is a secular government, but there are frum people in the government. And the frum people are Davar HaMaimid. And people know, whoever learned Yoredeya knows that Davar HaMaimid ain't no battle. So it's a frum people keeping this government together. So the status of today's government is not clear. If it has a status of Akum, which I don't think it does. I don't think it has a din of Melech, any of Melech Yisrael. But related to the Shaila is, what's the status of Eilat? Is Eilat have Eretz Yisrael or not? And one of the arguments is that the kibush of Tzahal has a din kibush Melech Yisrael. And for that reason, has a din of Eretz Yisrael. And many people follow this. Right? No one, none of us keep 2 days of Yom Tov and Eilat because we hold it's Eretz Yisrael. Not necessarily because of Tzahal reasons, but that is one of the reasons given, that kibush of a Jewish army, even Sinai, right? Sharm el-Sheikh. If you were in Sharm el-Sheikh between 67 and 73, it's 1 day Yom Tov, according to many, many opinions. Okay. Al-Hepich, there's shittas, you have to keep 2 days Yom Tov in Ramli and Lud. The Chazon Ish would never did Malach on second day Yom Tov, because he has a shita that's only where the messengers actually went that you keep 1 day Yom Tov. We hold the halacha, it's where they could have reached. The Chazon Ish holds, it's only where the messengers literally reached. And since Lod Ramli and Bnei Brak were not around in those years, the messengers never went there. So the Chazon Ish would keep second day Yom Tov, at least Deiraisa, because of this reason. Hey, mind-boggling, huh? This is wow. Like, it was worth coming tonight just for that, huh? That's like really cool.
Not
I thought
the same Bnei Brak as it was then?
No. For sure not. The closest identification with the Haggadah of Bnei Brak that I found is Givat Shmuel, which is across the way. But there is a sheet of Bnei Brak is in the Galil.
That's not the Bnei Brak.
Yeah. It's not impossible, I guess. It's not impossible. But that's very cool that the messengers, the Chazon Ish kept 2 days Yom Tov. People don't realize this, but he never ate bread on the eighth day Pesach. Okay. Under currency, we'll skip that. We'll go to taxes. That's a hot one. The Maharsham and the Maharik. You see the taxes, which I quote the Maharik and the Maharsham, very similar tshuvas, that even when the Jews pay higher taxes, you have to follow along because it's one society, it goes by society. The Israeli taxes tshuva have there under the bottom one, the last one there in taxes, is Yevia Omer, and Vadi Yosef has there in Yevia Omer, and also Yechava Das in Chelek Hay, tshuva Samech Dalid, has a very, very well-written, eloquent argument why you have to keep Dina Machuz Dina in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein also has a great paper on why you have to keep Dina Machuz Dina in Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Yisrael Meir Lau also has a very famous paper on this issue as well. Okay, but Rav Vadia holds very much of Dina Machuz Dina in Eretz Yisrael. Why did he write that? You know, you could say that he's part of the Israeli system, maybe that's why, but maybe he really believes that. So it's funny. So Rav Vadia also says, you just say halo with Abracha Yom Atzmut. He says that in all the tshuvas. You say halo on Yom Atzmut with Abracha. I in Hashul don't say halo. With him there? I don't know. Okay.
Politically correct.
Right, that's what I'm hinting to, right. So it could be, but if you want a good argument on Dina Machuz Din Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, Lalum.
And he said he has Eva Chelebel Mavoi. How many doesn't hold
Yeah, right. But no, but it's a good point. By the way, everyone agrees. That's one point. And the Avkas Rochel, Rav Yosef Karun, is the Avkas Rochel has a great tshuva where he says, no matter what, you can never go to secular courts. I mean, you can never go to secular courts. No matter what the Dina Machus Dina is, you cannot take a Jew to secular courts. Okay, there's other tshuvas about getting a hold on someone's property until you get to the Beis Din. Okay, there's a lot of tshuvas on that as well. But going to court, there's no Dina Machus Dina that will allow you to go to court. Okay, moving right along. I mentioned, okay, documents. Avnei HaEfod and the Rivash, whether a will, if you don't have a halachic will, but you have a secular will, does it, is it chal? So most poskim say that a secular will be chal because of Dinah Malchus HaDina, even though you shouldn't do that. A good tshuva is a notification of death one. Documents of personal relationships. Yabi Omer Ibn Ezra Chalak Zayin. He has a case over there of a lady who made aliyah from Russia. A lady made aliyah from Russia. Her husband died in one of the wars. Let's call it World War II. Maybe it was even World War I, could have been. And she wants to get remarried in Eretz Yisrael. She doesn't have any proof her husband died. Ah, she gets a letter in the mail from the Russian authorities that her husband died. So Avadi Yosef says she can remarry based on Dina Machus HaDina.
Wow.
If they issue a letter that says he's officially dead, has a status of Dina Machus HaDina, she's allowed to remarry.
That's why for them to override the whole get issue. In which case, Dina Machus doesn't apply to get, so they can tell me right
He's letters. Really dead. Because they pass and he's dead.
That's a whole way around the situation.
If that's the power of the government ruling that a guy no longer lives, it's acceptable.
Why not get around the whole...
Fascinating tshuva. Not long, it's not hard.
Why not get around the whole good situation that way?
Why?
Have a secular government issue letters that this guy's dead. The husband's dead.
Well, as we go, okay, but like you said, there's a good chazak, he's dead because he was in the army. He went to the army, so it's very possible. But you want to play games that the guy's dead when he's really on a business trip in Hong Kong? You can't do that.
I'm just telling you a way to beat the system here.
I like your idea, but you got to find... you could say he's dead. He has to really be dead.
I'm saying if the government is willing to issue the letter, the mayor says, I'll write the letter on mayor stationery.
That know, there's good shorts...
certify right. So-and-so is no longer alive.
Okay, Rav Avadia has other cheshbonos also why he said the woman is allowed to marry. I'm telling you, it's matter good on government letter. I'm telling you right now. You good? Yeah, like I just said. I just said that there were more bases. I said there were other. I said, yes. Right. 100% right. You're 100% right. No, I said before you said this. I did say there were other cheshbonos also. Why it was matter good on. I wasn't 15. No, it wasn't a kiddush. Okay. I'm telling you, what you said is all true. Everything said is right. But I'm telling you also, he brings it as a to be matzah dina husadina. Big. It's an interesting tshuva. Look it up. I don't make this stuff up. You know, I just share it with you. You could like it or you don't like it. But he does say it. The notification of death had status. It had status. Yeah, this is a major argument. Yeah. He had another Sif Lahakel, and this was with it, but this is the forefront Sif Lahakel. There were other things, yes. Dina Demachusadina. He says specifically Dina Demachusadina. Yeah, it wasn't Mesil Hakadimu. Yeah, that's good kasha, that wasn't brought up. Okay, we've got more than 5 minutes. Okay, one last tshuva. One last is a good one. The Das Kohen, also Rav Cook, under business law, civil law. Kosher labels. So when you go buy a product in the supermarket, what right do you have to eat it? Because someone printed a kosher label. Anyone can print a kosher label. I can print a kosher. You can put on pork chops, kosher labels, you can put whatever you want. So Rav Cook says, because of Dina Demachus HaDina, and they're scared of getting caught, you're allowed to buy the product and eat it because of Dina Demachus HaDina, the label can be relied upon. Shkoyach. He brings in Mahuzdin also. Okay. But it's not Mir Tes alone. It's not Mir Tes alone. It's not Mir Tes alone. No. Interesting stuff. Look at it. Go ahead. Right. So Moshe Feinstein. Yeah. Shkoya, I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to look up my business off the law.